Trying this again. This is Pure Decking, show number 483 for Thursday, June the 16th, 1999. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and reminding you to double-check your Windows telemetry settings. Recent updates have been turning it back on. So, you know, rerun shut up 10 or Win Arrow Tweaker or whatever, because I've noticed mine got turned back on. I don't know about you guys. And it was slowing my machine down because I think it was like it hadn't run for a while, so it was like trying to play catch up or something. It's like, you bastard.
Yeah, Windows is broke. One of the things I like to use at work.
Snipping tool?
No, it wasn't a snipping tool. It was proprietary software, but it was designed a long time ago. And only worked on Internet Explorer. And Internet Explorer is gone.
Yep, that's one of the stories I got for us tonight, is that they have officially dropped support for Internet Explorer.
So. And, yeah, it disappeared from our work computers last week.
Well, they're not going to patch it no more, so, yeah, we're going to be yanking it off everything where I work, too. But I guess we should finish at the intro. Tonight we have a madman.
Hola! I have strawberry lager, and it is amazing.
I'm doing the standard bourbon barrel ale. And we have an Are You?
I have essentially what is equivalent to toilet water.
Lovely.
Top Tank.
Brando?
I only
Brando?
Drink. No,
that's,
I drink.
That's what plants love.
I drink Top Tank.
Come on, man. It's what plants crave if you're going to do it. But it's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
Oh, wait a minute. Brando was the only, the toilet was the only place water could be found in that movie. I was completely wrong on all counts. Damn it!
As I said, I'm drinking Top Tank, man.
So
top shelf water.
In the IRC tonight, we have Cyber Lard, Cycros, Madman, and myself. None of who are owners of the channel. I gotta figure out what happened with the channel, because at some point when we swapped IRC, we lost ownership of the IRC. So whoever has ownership of the IRC, could you like do that? Or we'll have to clear everybody out and recreate it or something. I don't know.
Oh, the coffee maker owns it, the bastard. Not only should it not be on the internet, it owns my IRC channel.
Time for an epic quest to locate which of the coffee makers of the world is correct in controlling our IRC channel. Madman's just going to be going around from office to office, unplugging every coffee maker he can to try to find it.
Start with my neighbor. Neighbors, hi, I'm here to unplug your coffee maker. Don't make this harder than it has to be.
Oh, shit.
It shouldn't be on the internet anyway.
Fuck, I'm not armed, but I can be.
You go in there and it's like, you know, a bun from the 1990s.
I'm going to unplug it to make sure a little bastard can be camouflaged.
He gives up on unplugging, goes around with a shotgun, just shooting Keurigs through the window. All right. Let's get into this one. It's from CNBC. Coinbase lays off 18% of its workforce as its executives prepare for a recession and a crypto winter. Coinbase is laying off almost a fifth of its workforce amid a collapse of its stock and crypto prices. Cryptocurrency exchange will cut 18% of full-time jobs, according to emails sent to employees Tuesday morning. Coinbase has roughly 5,000 full-time workers. Doing what? Translating to a headcount reduction of about 1,100 people. Shares of Coinbase closed down 0.83%. Let's see. CEO Brian Armstrong pointed to a possible recession and a need to manage Coinbase's burn rate and increase efficiency. He also said the company grew too quickly during a bull market. Quote, "We appear to be entering a recession after a 10-year economic boom. A recession could lead to another crypto winter, which could last for an extended period," unquote, Armstrong said in an email, adding that past crypto winters have resulted in significant decline in trading activity. What other past crypto winters? Are you talking about when Bitcoin was worth less than $100? I mean, usually it's a dip for like a month. That's not a crypto winter. That's a dip.
This is testing one of the things I thought crypto might be used for, which was digital gold, attempting to evade inflation.
Holding value when regular currency was going out, yeah.
But the issue is, at least with investors I've read and some of the economic podcasts I've listened to, crypto isn't tested enough for any major investors to use it that way. They were all using it as speculative investment to grow money, pretty much trying to be the last loser out whenever it finally popped, instead of using it as a hedge like gold or silver or land. So this is going to be interesting, at least in the financial aspect of it. I don't think it's going to affect the technology behind crypto, but the way it's treated is going to be interesting looking at this, at least in the future, looking back.
Psychro says percentage-wise they've had quite a few, but yeah, comparing numbers, nothing really matches. So, okay, fair enough. I mean, let's see. While it's hard to predict the economy or markets, we always plan for the worst so we can operate the business through any environment. Coinbase had initially said it was pausing hiring. 2 weeks later, the crypto giant announced that it was extending the freeze, quote, for the foreseeable future. Let's see. Oh, Psychros is saying he bought into Bitcoin, you know, when it was a couple hundred bucks. Or 140 back because RU said you missed the boat on it. Well, you know, to be fair, nobody saw that coming.
Don't ever take fucking financial advice from me, man. I can't handle my own money, let alone anyone else's.
Well, you actually might have legal trouble if somebody says you're giving them financial advice over the internet.
Yeah, no, look, if you've made money out of it, great. But I've never really been one for the digital currencies, and Morps will let you know about that one. Never believed in it from day one. But, yeah, congrats, man, if you bought in at 140.
Yeah, but
you're doing pretty well today.
That's the real question is, do you have it today, or did you sell out when it hit a couple of grand thinking you were doing good? Which, granted, a lot of the people who got in early did. They got out, you know, when it hit a couple thousand thinking, oh, that's got to be it. But
and one thing I always hate when it comes to these stories, people saying they've lost money in Bitcoin or whatever. So long as you haven't sold your Bitcoin, you have lost nothing. Hang on to it till it goes back up.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say it that way, Madman, because I've got another story at the end of the block tonight that is about when we get to it, it's about people saying they've lost all this money when I don't think they've actually lost anything. But
yeah, unless you've, when it comes to at least the crypto dips right now, unless you've actually sold the crypto you have, you've lost nothing. And that's a problem I've had with a proposal Nancy put forth of taxing people on unrealized gains. If you haven't sold it, you haven't gained anything. And you can't write it off as a loss if you haven't sold it because you haven't lost anything. You have to wait until the sale for anything to matter. And you're just hoping that you sell at the right time.
Well, now, that's a question. So let's say they pass the thing and start taxing unrealized gains, and then the value of it goes down. Do you get a refund? Do you get your money back?
Fuck no.
You should, but
yeah,
you're going to tax... Yeah. How are you gonna write off an unrealized loss? Same thing as how are you gonna tax me on an unrealized gain? It's fucked up. There's not a good way of doing either of those. And how far back can you go with the loss?
I have no clue. This is why I'm...
If I bought at 140 on Bitcoin and it goes up to 10,000 but then drops to 6, if I sell it, not only have I not lost anything, I actually made money. So there's a lot of people that did the sell-off after the drop that they're saying they lost because they didn't sell at the peak, but they still made money. They didn't lose anything. They gained money.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just – it makes so little sense to me, some of the arguments I'm hearing floating around, that I just – I'm not sure what to do anymore. It's like either I have missed something big or, you know, really seriously misunderstood it, or people are nuts. So we're
people
both.
Are nuts, and a lot of people that are talking out of their ass.
I mean, two things can be true. I could totally misunderstand it and be talking to crazy people. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, and like I said, I didn't think that it was going to drop when the currencies were dropping, like the dollar and the yuan. I figured Bitcoin could be considered a safe haven asset, and it's not being treated that way right now.
Well, it's not providing the safe haven because it's down 50%.
So. Well, the reason it's down 50% is people are selling it instead of buying it. So if it was going to be treated as a safe haven asset, it would act like that. Gold and real estate's going up because people are actually buying it to hedge against inflation.
Well, it looks like it might have hit the bottom right now. People are buying again.
Hopefully it has.
Both Doge and Bit. People are back in.
I can't say hopefully because I don't really care.
No, either do I. I follow it because it's like sports ball for me. I don't have any skin in the game. I'm just interested in the outcome.
I've got a little bit of play money in Bitcoin, but nothing real.
But depending on how much of it drops, if it drops and then stabilizes, it might turn into an actual currency.
I still think it's a very young commodity out there.
Well, that's the one reason I've heard certain investors aren't treating it as a safe haven asset is they said it's too young.
Yeah.
They don't know what it's going to do.
Well, I don't think anybody knows that right now. So.
And those who say they do are full of shit. I don't know.
Anyways,
I've never taken it seriously, so.
Let's see. Rest of the story. News comes from a deep route. For Coinbase shares, the stock went public via a direct listing last April during a boom in crypto markets and investors clamoring for high-growth tech stocks. Coinbase's shares are down 79% this year and 85% from the all-time high. Meanwhile, Bitcoin has dropped to near $22,000 and lost 53% of its value this year. San Francisco-based Coinbase reported a slump in users last quarter and a 27% decline in revenue from a year ago. The company gets a majority of its top line from transaction fees, which are closely tied to trading activity. President and Chief Operating Officer Emily Chow said it's a very difficult decision for Coinbase. Affected employees received a notification from Human Resources. If so, the memo was sent to a personal email as Coinbase cut off access to the company's systems. Armstrong called it the only practical choice given the number of employees with access to customer information and a way to ensure not even a single person made a rash decision that harmed the business or themselves. Coinbase employees will have access to... Yeah, so translation, some people found out they were laid off when they went to log in that morning and their computer said their account was closed.
I'm of two minds on this. I do believe it's a dick thing for a company to do.
Oh, I understand it.
But I do see they don't want to risk any customer's data being stolen because someone was pissed.
Yeah, and you don't want leaks. You don't want somebody going in and trashing a database. I mean, there are all the reasons to do that. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's my day job is worrying about those kind of things. But it's still kind of a dick move.
Yeah, because how am I going to know to even go apply for unemployment if I don't know I'm going to be laid off? So I can't even attempt to take advantage of the safety nets that our country provides until, I can't say it's too late because they can still do it, but it delays it. And I don't know what areas of the world they got laid off in, but where I'm at, they hold a week's worth of those benefits So if I know a week in advance I'm being laid off, I can apply, and then I don't have that much of an interruption in my income. But if I don't know till the day of, if I don't have any type of savings or cushion, there's a week that I'm going without. Now, I'm more responsible than that, so it's not going to be an issue for me, but some people live paycheck to paycheck.
Which means those people now be living payday loan to payday loan.
Well, at least until they get some of their, unemployment and food stamps. But like I said, it takes time.
So, well, I just wonder how that many people, it's like working at Coinbase, what are they doing? Because it's like Coinbase was a pretty automated platform. It's a mobile app. I mean, sure, you're going to have a lot of coders. You're going to have a bunch of bookkeepers doing the financials and stuff like that. But that's, it, for what Coinbase is, that seems like a lot of people.
Maybe they were spinning up and getting ready for the proposed regulatory compliance they would have to go through. Because if you remember, Congress has been talking about trying to treat them more as a bank and as a trading firm. Well, they could have been actually getting prepared for that.
Well, that's entirely possible and then plausible even. So, I don't know. I just, it's a mess. World's a mess. World's fucked up. Way to go, Joe. You know, it keeps going on here. The thing I'm concerned about with Bitcoin or with Coinbase, and again, this is what I always say. Don't keep your money in an exchange. I know Coinbase touts itself as also being a digital wallet and a where to keep your crypto. No, it is not. If you don't have access to the keys, you don't have your wallet. Coinbase has your wallet. Coinbase operates like a traditional bank. They're holding an account, and in that account is Bitcoin they say is yours, but it's not FDIC. So if Coinbase tanks and you haven't been able to pull your crypto out, we're literally talking about a run on a bank. Right. Well, it's not a bank, but, you know, equivalent to. So I would imagine that if you know, Coinbase really starts to run out and you've got a lot of money sitting in there, I mean, I wouldn't do it. I'd be afraid you wouldn't be able to get back out. So. But, I mean, that's what I say every time when we talk about one of these crypto things, you know, an exchange getting hacked or something like that. It's like, if you're going to keep crypto, hold the wallet yourself. Don't keep it in these apps because you don't control it. And if you don't control it, if they go out, guess what? I mean, I know I'm kind of saying, you know, take your money out of the bank and stuff it under the mattress. But at least with crypto, you can be reasonably secure in doing so. You know, keep a hardware
wallet. The one saying taking the actual physical currency out of the bank and stuff it under your mattress.
Well, maybe find a better place to hide it than under the mattress, but you know what I mean.
I do not trust banks at all. Really don't.
So, anyways.
Then again, have you taken hard currency and tried to deposit it into a bank these days?
Yeah.
They do not like taking money.
Probably get strip searched if you show up with a decent amount of hard currency trying to deposit.
They want to make sure that it is your account. Very much so. At least in this country, there is an attack on the dollar. I learned this when I was trying to avoid wiring money to people. Like, oh, you're a family member, and you need some money? I know where you bank. I'm just going to go deposit some cash in your checking account. Nope. They will not let you fucking do that.
Not anymore. They used to. It's like, but you might be funding terrorism. It's like, no, I'm just trying to help out a cousin. I mean...
Yeah, it's buying groceries for somebody. I assure you. You can call them on the phone number that you have, and they will tell you I can do this.
So, don't take your money out as cash. Take it out and buy dried grain. Just try lots of butter.
I haven't hit that pot yet.
I like what Psychro says. It's a lot harder to steal 50 grand worth of food.
A wise man has casks of olive oil and sacks of grain. I forget which part of the Bible that's from, but it's in the Bible. I never thought of it as an investment advice. I always thought of it as keep your cupboard full just in case a tornado hits the grocery store.
Yeah.
It's good advice.
I'm getting to that point now where, like, do I have enough? And every time I go, yeah, I think I've got enough, something else happens, and I'm like, fuck, do I need more? And then you try and convince yourself not to buy more. And you go, but what if you're right? And then, no, what if you're wrong? Well, either way, it doesn't matter. You still have food. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you know, and Psycho says it doesn't matter. It's cheaper and you'll eat it eventually anyways. Well, if you're actually stockpiling food, you rotate it, right? You know, you buy new food that goes in the stock. The stuff that's in the stock is what you eat. You don't just leave it in the stock for 6 years and come back and go, oh, it's all moldy. Well, shit, now that this tornado hits, I'm really in trouble. You know,
If you're storing food that can go moldy, you're doing it wrong.
Well, okay, bad example.
Canned and dried goods.
Yeah, well, even that, I've worked at a store, you rotate it when you're restocking.
Yeah, I'm eating 2021 supplies right now, currently.
And he says, don't buy MREs and shit you won't eat. Yeah.
Yeah, well,
they sell the buckets of camping food as like preparedness thing. I looked into one of those things and it might be an easy way to go. And it's like, oh no, that's very expensive. And most of it doesn't even look that good. So it's like,
dude, figure out one canned good you like that you could eat over and over again for at least 2 weeks. Buy that canned good. Substitute it with rice and pasta. And grab some condiments to go with it, just to change it up a little bit. I'm a ravioli man myself, and I top that up with pasta.
Ravioli is pasta.
I add more pasta to it, madman.
Okay. I do like the idea of Spam. Spam and rice. Oh, I might actually try Spam fried rice for the first time ever. It's been on the back of the can forever, but I always think, who the hell makes Spam fried rice? The answer to that is everyone in Hawaii.
A hungry man. Well, I can't eat mangoes and I can't eat tin spaghetti anymore. Survived on that for 2.5 fucking weeks straight. I'll never eat it ever again.
Yeah, make it like college days where you had ramen for lunch for, you know, months on end. For the longest time, I could not eat ramen. I've gotten over that since then, and occasionally it's all right. But, you know, it's like, I mean, and ramen actually is a good staple one to keep because it takes a long-ass time to go bad, and as long as you keep it dry.
It just says best before, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really go bad as long as you keep it dry and you don't, you know, crush it or bust the packaging. But
also,
it's
to another
ramen.
Thing to keep in that is some flavor for watering, water flavor.
Yes.
You know, like red cordial, because boiled water tastes like ass. Trust me. Also, too, if you're going to boil water, allow 5 hours for it to cool down before you can drink it. People never think of that one.
Actually, the one I always like is keep a bottle of Everclear because...
Yeah.
You can put, oh geez, I forget what the ratio is. It's like basically a shot glass of Everclear in a gallon or two of water. And I mean, you know, it's not as good as boiling, but it kills most of what's in it. And it's not so much alcohol that it's going to affect the flavor or give you a hard time.
Next story.
And double check the ratio on that because I've forgotten what it is now since I read it. But yeah, Everclear is better than using bleach or definitely iodine. but I forget what the ratio I read was. Next story is from The Verge. Google suspends engineer who claims the AI is sentient. Oh, goodness. Somebody's watched way way too many movies. Google has placed one of its engineers on paid administrative leave after allegedly breaking its confidentiality policies after he grew concerned that an AI chatbot had achieved sentience. The Washington Post reports. The engineer, Blake Lamone, has worked for Google's responsible AI organization and was testing whether its Lambda model generates discriminatory language or hate speech. The engineer's concerns reportedly grew out of convincing responses he saw the AI system generating about its rights and the ethics of robots. In April, he shared a document with the executives titled, Is Lambda Sentient? Or sentient, I guess is what it would be. Containing a transcript of his conversations with the AI, after being placed on leave, he published the transcript via his Medium account, which he says shows it arguing, quote, that it is sentient because it has feelings, emotion, and subjective experience, unquote. Oh, buddy, you don't know how those chatbots work, do you? They take the input that one user's giving it and feed that back to another.
The headline should have been Lonely Engineer Falls in Love with Chatbot.
Wasn't that a movie? Wasn't that a couple of movies?
I don't know. It's 2 weeks from today's headlines.
Google believes Lamone's actions relating to his work on Lambda have violated its confidentiality policies, the Washington Post and the Guardian report. He reportedly invited a lawyer to represent the AI system and spoke to a representative from the House Judiciary Committee about claimed unethical activities at Google. In a June 6th Medium post, the day Lamone was placed on administrative leave, the engineer said he sought a, quote, a minimal amount of outside consultation to help guide me in my investigations, unquote, and that the list of people he has held discussions with include U.S. government employees. I mean, this is somebody who has decided that the chatbot is sentient and that Google is abusing it because they've watched way too much Star Trek or something. Yeah, Psychros says Riker's girlfriend in the IRC. And the search giant announced Lambda publicly at Google I.O. last year, in which it hopes will improve its conversation AI assistance and make for more natural conversations. The company already uses similar language model technology for Gmail's Smart Compose feature and for search engine queries. And in a statement given to WaPo, a spokesperson from Google said there is no evidence that Lambda is sentient. Quote, our team, including ethicists and technologists, have reviewed Blake's concerns per our AI principles and have informed him that the evidence does not support his claims. He was told there is no evidence that Lambda is sentient and lots of evidence against it, unquote, said spokesperson Brian Gabriel. Of course, or quote, of course, some in the broader AI community are considering the long-term possibility of sentient or general AI, but it doesn't make sense to do so by anthropomorphizing today's conversational models, which are not sentient, unquote, Gabriel said. Quote, these systems imitate the types of exchanges found in millions of sentences and can riff on any fantastical topic, unquote. Hundreds of researchers and engineers have conversed with Lambda, and we are not aware of anyone else making wide-ranging assertions or anthropomorphizing Lambda the way Blake has, Gabriel said. A linguistics professor interviewed by WaPro agreed that it's incorrect to equate convincing written response with sentience. Quote, we now have machines that can mindlessly generate words, but we haven't learned how to stop imagining a mind behind them, unquote, said University of Washington professor Emily M. Bender. Let's see. The rest of the story is kind of meh. But anyways, yeah, I'm fairly certain what's happened here is this guy has heavily projected onto the chatbot, decided it was alive, and then, I mean, he went to the government, he got a lawyer. I mean, it's like, it's data from Star Trek, and I have to save him from Google. No, buddy, You've lost the plot, man. you've lost the plot. It's a chatbot. It's not alive.
Hey, man, there are just hundreds of single girls out there waiting to meet him. Just click on the tab, dude. You can start talking to him right now.
This is the mechanics behind the bot is, I just got asked this question. X amount of users responded this way. X is above this variable. I should respond this way?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's a natural language response, right? So if you ask it a question, it's going to look in its database. It's going to do a bunch of comparative meanings, you know, comparative queries on the phrases in the question. And then it's going to look up its database of responses and try to find one that it thinks makes sense. Now, this is why sometimes with these chatbots, you get some really good responses and sometimes you don't, is because it's basically constructing a response based on a whole bunch of previous interactions. One of the reasons you need so much horsepower to run these kind of bots is precisely because they're constantly doing comparative learning. Actually, once you've finalized a model, a lot of these things don't even need a lot of horsepower to run. It's the constantly updating of the model that requires all the horsepower. So, yeah, he's confused a system that takes other users' input, shuffles it up, and feeds it back out in a way that makes sense, and decided there must be a mind behind it controlling it. It's sort of like imagining that there's, I don't know, somebody sitting in the vending machine who's handing you your snacks because you can't see how the thing works on the inside, you know, behind the giant Coca-Cola logo.
I just don't know how they get the midgets in the ATMs.
They cut off their legs at the knees. I figured that out. So, one question I had, because I actually talk to people, not robots. Robots can fucking kiss my ass, except for when they take over the world, then I love you. But, when developing, do they just have someone else click, that was a good response, that response sucked?
Yes.
So it knows that whenever I ask, what's your favorite color automobile, taco is not a good answer.
That's likely what this guy's job was, is judging, because that's how you train these things, is it generates a response, you rank the response. If it's a good response, it remembers that it was a good response, and it will use that as a guide to make future responses. If you say that was a shit response, it'll try not to use that one so much. That's exactly how these things work. If you ever watched Suave likes to link them, there's a video of AIs learning to play Mario Brothers or something like that, you know? And they've trained it.
Oh, yeah, the jump simulator.
Right. They've trained the thing what the you died screen looks like. That way that's how it knows that was a bad move. You know, is they've given it the parameters of what's good and what's bad, and it's able to just interpret that and feed it in. So
have
in that
you ever
case,
watched the video where it ran out of time?
No.
Yeah, it just starts and just stands there and realizes the only way to win is not to play.
That's funny.
Oh, no, it wasn't that. It had to learn to start moving because it wasn't told to do anything, so it just sits there until the you died screen comes up, and now it knows you have to move or you're eventually going to die.
Yeah, so it's...
Those things are retarded, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it's in the case of something like a video game, it's created a feedback loop that it can sit there and iterate on until you actually get a bot that can complete the level, right? So... That's cool and all, but in the case
not
of a chatbot, cool. you need somebody manually training it.
If you really want to look at some interesting video game AI, look at the Minecraft AI that they're running at the moment. It is, you don't even know it's not another person.
That's not AI. It's not actually making a choice.
It's a pathing bot.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Well, again, you know, a lot of these, you have to remember, we call these things bots because they're robots. They are literal automatons. You said it. They don't decide for themselves. They're running a script. They're running a program.
Oh, yeah, I'm under no illusion that this is actual AI. I know it's a
simulated intelligence. I like the term for that.
It's not fucking data. Yeah.
The script is getting so good, though, that it's hard to tell sometimes whether that's a script or a person.
Oh, sure. So, and that's part of the point of the thing, is so that you can interact with it like it's a person, because it's easier than, you know, having to learn complicated commands or whatever. So, but yeah, I think this guy is just projecting a lot and trying to I think he's decided he's living in a TV series or something like that, and
he needs to ask the bot something super esoteric that no one's discussed with it before.
The problem is he works at Google, and so people are constantly trying to do that. So, but anyways, let's move on to the next one. This is from NBC News. Japan makes online insults punishable by 1 year in jail in wake of reality star's death. My God, this is what happens when you don't have a constitution protecting your right to free speech, huh? Japan has made online insults punishable by up to a year in prison in an effort to reduce cyberbullying after the death of reality television star who had faced a wave of online abuse. Previously, the maximum penalty for the crime of insultation was less than 30 days detention or a fine of less than 10,000 yen, about $75. The amendment to Japan's penal code, which lawmakers passed Monday, is set to take effect this summer and introduces the prison term and increases the maximum fine to 300,000 yen. The statute of limitations on prosecution was also increased to 3 years from one. Although the law also covers insults made offline, those are less likely to be subject to the tougher penalties because they are disseminated to fewer people, said Ruchi Nozaki, a senior partner at the law firm of Atsumi and Sakai in Tokyo. There has been...
Hold up. If I tell one person online to eat shit and die, that's not any different than me telling one person in real life to eat shit and die.
But you use
the computer, telling
so
one
they
person
have...
that.
That you use the computer to do it, so they actually have a log and evidence, as opposed to just, you know, this person said something mean to me.
So it's easier to prove, but that shouldn't change the penalty. So if I walk up to you and say "eat shit and die," or if I type it in TeamSpeak,
I'm still gonna laugh at your, you know, the fact that you felt you needed to say that, and you know, ridicule you for it. But you know, other than that.
So the little inconsistencies like that piss me off.
There's been greater concern about cyberbullying in Japan since 2020 when Hana Kimura, a 22-year-old professional wrestler and cast member on the Netflix series Terrence House, died by suicide. Died by suicide seems like an odd way to write that. Maybe it's just me. After being harassed online. I normally just put killed themselves, took their own life, you know, something like that. Died by suicide sounds very clinical. Two men who posted online insults about Kuruma before her death were each fined 9,000 yen last year. Her mother, Kokyo, said she pushed to strengthen the law on cyberbullying because she found the penalties insufficient. Quote, I wanted people to know that this is a crime, unquote, she said at a news conference Monday after the legislation was passed. But she added that if social media receives all the blame for abusive behavior, nothing will change. Quote, the issue is how we think, she said. Social media is like a mirror that reflects the minds of those who use it. Compounding Japan's bullying problem is a stigma around mental health issues, said Vicky Sikorji, director of Tell Lifeline, a crisis hotline in Japan. I'm trying to get these names right. I know I'm not, but I'm at least trying. Quote, a stricter sentence by itself is not an answer, but it's the beginning of a conversation and beginning of an attitude change, unquote, she said in a video interview. Opponents of the legislation, as well as some legal experts, have argued it could have a chilling effect on news media or criticism of public figures. And here's the problem I have with the law. Quote, the definition of insultation is not clear, unquote, Sanae Fujitima, a fellow at the Human Rights Center at the University of Essex in England, said in an email, quote, therefore there is a risk of abuse of this blanket clause, unquote. And there it is. In response to the concerns, a provision was added for the law's impact on free speech to be reviewed in 3 years. I mean,
the UK just did something similar.
I wonder if that provision means it sunsets and they have to re-vote on it, or they just have to look at it.
I think it just means they have to look at it.
Less like that. It goes away and we'll re-vote on it.
I just don't like that it's not defined. It's just like, well, what's insultation? You know?
Well, the British version is significant mental harm.
Okay, how do you define that?
Exactly, right?
You know, if I call madman a flaming homosexual... You know, we're all going to know it's a joke, usually, probably. Mainly because Mad Men's not normally on fire. But...
Hey, I'm the fifth flaming sack of pricks. I am a flaming sack of pricks. I will let you... That's acceptable. Or, let's see, Chalk Devil is also an acceptable one.
I like Chalk Devil. That's a good one. But my point is, this is a law passed on. You've hurt someone's feelings. How the hell do you measure that? Do you define that? Do you... I mean, it's a whim law, right? I mean,
yeah.
Basically, don't say anything ever. That's what that translates to. Don't say anything ever, because if you take an opinion on anything, somebody's feelings are going to be hurt, and they can prosecute you in Japan.
And this is where I think social media will be dead in 10 years.
Because nobody can handle it.
Nobody will want to say anything on a mainstream website for fear of having, you know, somebody lose their shit. I mean, you're effectively legislating away social media one bit at a time. And you know what? I don't fucking care. Good.
Fair enough.
I want to see social media just be a fucking shit show. Like, I mean, an absolute free-for-all shit show.
I wouldn't mind seeing most social media fade out, as long as, like, forums and shit like that came back. You know, little private sites that were focused.
Dude, I think small sites with limited numbers will become the thing again.
I hope so, but I don't see it going that way.
Yeah. My predictions are never right. Look at my $140 Bitcoin prediction.
Although, the law itself, what we consider free speech hasn't always been free speech. Like, there's been exceptions for, in my country, for most all of its existence, exceptions for fighting words and profanity. So if I walked up and insulted your mother, for a long time, if you punched me in the face, you wouldn't have been charged. Because I used fighting words and deserved to get punched in the face.
But up until recently...
If I walked around yelling the N-word and, like, that's profanity, or suck my balls, or whatever, but wasn't protected under free speech.
Man, up until recently, if you mouth, you know, even if you didn't mouth off to me, and I socked you in the face, but all it, you know, it didn't, like, break your nose, or bust your jaw, lose a tooth, or draw blood... Nobody was going to bother with the assault charge for that anyways. That's a recent thing that it's like, oh, you shoved me. That's assault, you know. Fairly recent.
Oh.
I mean, you know, why do you think bar fights were not really a concern? It's like, you know, yeah, somebody might have gotten hurt, but it was a bar fight. It wasn't a, you know, assault was like, you know, you had to really hurt them. Now
I mean,
it's like,
I don't know about
you lay a finger on them, that's assault.
I don't know about you, but back when I used to go to bars regularly to see actual fights, it never went too far anyway, because enough people jumped in if it did become a one-sided affair to break it up.
Well, yeah, so, I've never seen anyone hospitalized. Usually a few punches and it's over.
The only time I've seen someone hospitalized is when a bouncer's decided his authority is absolute.
Well... That's not a bar fight. That's a bouncer being an ass.
Yeah, they generally are.
You know, what's the joke? They want you to pay for the stool that we broke over my neck, you know?
Oh, this guy was wishing he had a stool broken over his neck. He got thrown out of a three-story window.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. He was fucking around. He was really fucking around. And was asked to leave, wouldn't leave.
Well, it's like the guy who rushed up on Chappelle's, you know, show at the stage, and he got himself good and fucked up.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, they didn't press charges on him, because you look at him, he's fucked up. I mean, he got what he deserved.
You can't press charges on a man you can't handcuff because one arm's so dislocated. You can't get it around.
So, I don't know, man. I mean, I know it's Japan and they're not here, but it really feels like we're moving towards very, to be a very soft and very weak people.
We are.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous.
We've had good times too long.
It's by design, though, Morps.
But it's dangerous because you end up with people who can't handle when something they don't like happens and, you know, can't react poorly to things. I mean, that's...
You end up with a society that collapses and your country goes away.
Yeah, I guess.
Makes for good books in 50 years, though.
Eh. What, you think we'll get the Hunger Games? You know, for
they
real?
Were doing what to children? What the fuck? Like, I thought Mayan sacrifice went out, you know, when the Mayans died. But no, we seem to be sacrificing children again somehow. I don't know if anyone's noticed that lately.
Oh, you know, anything on the altar of political correctness, I guess.
I mean, we're not ripping their hearts out to give to the sun god just yet, but I mean,
no.
Well, that's why it's hot outside.
We sucked the brains out a year.
I mean, now we're just piling up genitals, right?
You know? No, just genitals, are you? We suck the brains out of millions of children a year.
Yeah, that too.
I mean,
so, yeah, we've full on mind sacrifice for a while.
I mean, that's why it's so damn hot outside. Is nobody's sacrificing kids to the sun anymore? Sun's mad
about
it.
I thought because I switched from beer to switched from bourbon to beer.
I did too. Actually, I've backed off lately.
That's why it's getting hotter.
Well, that and I realized how quickly I was going through the bottles, and I'm like, you know, this might be a start of a problem. So I've been trying to.
Yeah, I went pretty hard on the scotch last week at a family event. Fuck, geez, I did not pull up well. I mean, really, I didn't pull up well at all.
Well, Ted, we're starting to sink to the sun because I stopped drinking bourbon. Well, we'll back off a bit this weekend because I'm gonna have a few shots.
There you go. Yeah, I'm going to need to get another bottle. I went a couple of weeks without touching actual bourbon, or even hard liquor for that matter, so... I think
next
it's
next story?
Right. Next story, Android Police. Internet Explorer ends 26-year run as top browser for installing other browsers. And yes, I went with this version of the story
long
because...
enough to get Firefox.
I went with this version of the story because that headline is the best one.
But it's true.
Did Chrome take its place?
Yep. Time comes for us all. Actually, it's Edge, but yeah.
I was going to say, it's Edge, isn't it?
Yeah, but Edge is built on Chromium. So it's Microsoft's version of Chrome, basically. Here it is. Let's see. The time comes for us all. It's a lesson Microsoft's learning the hard way as the once dominant browser is finally no more. Never again will the circular E logo be the first icon you click on when booting a new PC, nor will you have to spend a Saturday afternoon uninstalling 7 toolbars from your mother's computer. Internet Explorer dies tomorrow, June the 15th. Well, today's the 16th, so leaving nothing but memories and Edge behind. You can't say no one saw this coming. You might say Microsoft's browser died years ago, replaced by Chrome and to a lesser extent Firefox. Internet Explorer's final numbered release dropped way back in 2013 during the height of Windows 8. Unbeknownst to many, the company had already begun working on Windows 10, much beloved operating system that shipped with a brand new browser. Edge, I would argue about much beloved, but... anyways, Edge didn't light the world on fire. These days, it's basically a Microsoft-skinned version of Chrome, but the message was clear, Internet Explorer's days are numbered. Google's actions against Internet Explorer 6 are well-documented. At the end of the 2000s, engineers at YouTube conspired to bring down the ancient XP-friendly browser simply by adding a browser to the top of the page that pushed users to upgrade to a newer browser. The days of Internet Explorer dominating the web came to an end. Users started updating in droves while... technology journalists praised Google's attempts to make the internet faster and safer. Never mind that higher-ups had never signed off on the plan. It had worked, and other product teams started adapting the same technique. Blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, basically, Internet Explorer was kind of the browser on Windows up until early 2000s when you had Chrome and Firefox come out. Of course, Mozilla had been the other browser to have instead of IE. Of course, before that, it was Netscape, but, yeah, it was, Mozilla I've forgotten the company names, but yeah, so it was Netscape, and the Netscape code was forked to make Firefox, and Firefox is the last browser that's not based on Chromium that's still a major contender. I think almost everything else is based on Chromium these days. Opera is now based on Chromium. Edge is based on Chromium. I think Brave is based on Chromium. I don't remember if Vivaldi is its own engine or what if it's Chromium based also. That's the only one I'm unsure of. But yeah, Internet Explorer, you know, ding dong, the witch is dead. Now it's going to be Edge. It's going to be the same damn problems because Microsoft bloat and calls into the OS and crap. But speaking of Firefox, next story is from Bleeping Computer. And yes, I did roll right through that just because both of these kind of roll into each other. We can talk about them both. And I looked at the clock. So Firefox is now blocking cross-site tracking by default for all users. This is good. Microsoft says, or Mozilla says today that all Firefox users will now be protected by default against cross-site tracking while browsing the internet. This is because starting today, Mozilla is rolling out and enabling its Total Cookie Protection set of privacy improvements for all Firefox users worldwide. Total Cookie Protection forces all websites to keep their cookies in separate jars, thus blocking attempts to track you across the web and building browsing profiles. First introduced in the release of Firefox 86 in February of 2021, this privacy feature was only active until now in private browsing or if you manually enabled strict ETP mode in the browser settings. Quote, Total Cookie Protection offers strong protections against tracking without affecting your browsing experience, unquote, said Mozilla today. Total Cookie Protection is Firefox's strongest privacy protection to date, confining cookies to sites where they are created and thus preventing tracking companies from using these cookies to track your browsing from site to site. By creating a separate cookie jar for every website, Firefox will automatically block any attempt to use cookies to track the users while they're browsing the web. Unfortunately, there's more than just cookies these days, but it's a good move. Today's announcement further highlights Mozilla's ongoing fight with ad tech companies' online tracking efforts, which started in 2018 when it first introduced an enhanced tracking protection feature. 1 year later, Mozilla toggled enhanced tracking protection in Firefox by default to automatically block cookies from known trackers. After the long, the rest of this is not really important. Okay, so yeah, you know, Internet Explorer is dead. Edge is based on Chrome, and Firefox has just turned on this cookie segregation, which I actually think is really good. Nothing?
Oh. My only annoying thing is some of the programs I used for work were built around Internet Explorer, and the functionality didn't transfer to Edge.
Really? Because Edge has a legacy mode that still uses the Trident engine. You should be able to pull a site up in legacy mode, and it should act like Internet Explorer. So even
I may try pulling up in legacy. I've just been opening up Edge and going to it.
Yeah, if you go to a site and go to Edge and say show in legacy mode, I forget exactly where that is because I don't use Edge that much, but that should render it like it's Internet Explorer. It may still not work because a lot of really poorly coded apps actually look for like browser versions and shit like that. So who knows if it'll work or not, but it's worth trying.
Yeah.
So,
is that an add-on, or is it just come with the?
It should just be part of Edge. Oh, now you're gonna make me look. Let's see.
I was just curious. That's all. I don't use Edge anyway, so
yeah, I use Firefox most of the time. Although I'm gonna be experimenting with a new one here, and that's part of Dojo. But okay. Yeah, let's see. Edge. Yeah, your double bar up there. Microsoft Rewards, yeah, that's what you want. I forget where it is. More tools?
Yeah.
I use a few browsers, two for work because different programs like them, and then at home, I use the one I like.
I use Edge and Chrome at work because it's when I'm bouncing between identities, it's nice to have multiple browsers going, but where is it? There is a place to say show in legacy. A lot of times it'll pop up in a little bar at the top and say this site may work is you know this site's meant for legacy mode. But I don't know where that is now because I haven't had to use it.
Let me search for it.
Yeah, I'm just looking through the Firefox add-ons. Nothing new, really.
Let's see. Yeah, here we go. In Edge. Let's see. What do? You... Okay, if you go to a site that it thinks needs to be in legacy mode, it'll pop up a button up next to the address bar where you can hit the button and it'll load it up in legacy mode. So it looks like it has to detect it, or oh no, maybe you have to tell it to enable that. Yeah, it looks like maybe you have to enable it. I don't know where that is. I'm not sure I actually care. I'm sitting here doing this. I don't know why. I don't care enough.
What's the next story?
Next story is from PRNewsWire.com. And this one's weird. This is one I wanted to talk to you guys about because I'm trying to figure it out. Bots and fake users abandon shopping carts, costing online retailers $5.7 billion a year. And I'm trying to go, how is putting it in the shopping cart costing them money? Because, you know, you haven't actually bought it.
Like, yeah, I would think they'd do inventory as it went out the door, not as it went into the cart.
Yeah.
Unless they're using going into the cart as their expected sales figures.
I think that's what might be inflate. Going on, because this is kind of an interesting little blurb. GoTo market security leader CHEQ released data from their latest study that revealed e-commerce businesses lose $5.7 billion in potential sales, I don't like that.
Yeah, this is a bullshit story. Potential sales. That's like saying...
It's
Netflix
like saying I lost
$1 million due to, you know, potential viewers because of piracy.
Or like saying that I lost, you know, $50 million or whatever the number's up to because, you know, Powerball drew the wrong numbers and my ticket didn't match.
Yeah, exactly. You had the potential to have, you know, $50 million, but because of the evil bastards at Powerball, it's about writing a story that didn't need to be written.
Well,
I'll say there is a difference between the Powerball and the Netflix users. Netflix could have an argument if you're actually watching the show that they put out. These guys, I'm not getting the spaghetti if I don't buy the spaghetti. So there's only a sale when I make the buy, not when I put it in the cart.
Let me get through the first paragraph and see what you think. So by potential sales to bots and fake users who abandon carts. Cart abandonment schemes are often intended to deplete the amount of available inventory on a website, causing shoppers to go shop elsewhere where the item is available. E-commerce-related schemes can then be carried out by malicious individuals, competitors, and click farms, but are then also being driven by large networks of sophisticated bots.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's like it goes into the cart, and the website's counting the inventory is gone. So if I've got 50 bots, you know, if you've got 50 widgets in inventory and I've got 50 bots and they load it all up into the cart, your website now says sold out, even though you haven't actually sold any of them.
I wonder how long does the cart stay active before it's cleared out?
I mean, it sounds just like piss poor programming to me.
That's what I'm starting to think. You're making up stories because you can't get your shit right.
Oh, no, this one could be a legitimate thing. If they're not wanting to double sell, let's say I only have one copy of Guardians of the Galaxy on DVD, and I don't want to sell it to four people, they have to take that out of inventory when someone puts it in the cart. But if no one checks it out, I can't sell that one copy to someone else. So the fix is just put a time limit to how long a cart can exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, data was uncovered by running thousands of cybersecurity tests against e-commerce website visitors around the world. Overall, 32% of direct and organic traffic to these retailer sites was found to be invalid, meaning that it does not have intent or ability to make a purchase or interact with the website in a meaningful way. So, I mean, it's an interesting scheme, you know, like if you're trying to run somebody out of business, just have bots constantly keep all their inventory held up in carts. But I mean, again, you'd think you could detect that kind of behavior and block them. So, I don't know. It's an interesting one. It's not really one I've explored before, but again, I mean, because the first thing I read was, yeah, that 5.7 in bit potential sales on cart abandonment, but then talking about the inventory. So I'm kind of, I don't know. It's an interesting concept, but I'm not sure. I think there's a level of bullshit here too that I'm not, you know, like you said, I don't think it's completely a fake story, but I don't think it's 5.7 billion.
5.7 would be accurate or easy to manage. Because I put stuff in my Amazon cart and then not emptied it, thinking I might buy it or come back later. And I don't know how much of that was Amazon itself and how much of that was a retailer through Amazon that I'm fucking over.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because that could spend some days in your cart.
Well, as often as I've you know, had things, you know, go quickly, like if you're trying to buy something that's, you know, low inventory. Yeah, I bought a 3D printer before that, you know, it, you know, they said in stock when I bought it, but it didn't ship till the next round of stock came in, because it took like a month before they shipped the damned thing. So
that was probably a company that did inventory at purchase.
Yeah.
I'm rather sure than inventory in cart.
So anyways, let's anything else on that?
Yeah, I think that's good.
All right, two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo, but they're related. The first is this website, privacytests.org, and this is cool. What these guys have done is they have developed a bunch of different tests to put web browsers through, right? State partitioning tests, navigation tests, HTTPS tests, you know, and, you know, all these different, this whole set of tests they can put things through. And when you first look at it, it looks like it's a marketing slide for Brave and this fork of Firefox called LibreWolf. But and at first I thought that's what it was, but as I played with it more, I was like, oh no, they are testing, because they've got iOS browsers, they've got Android browsers, they've got, you know, different nightly builds that they're testing out. So they are actually putting browsers through tests and just documenting the results, right? And they've even got it separated out between regular mode and privacy mode. So this is pretty cool, because one, it shows things like Brave actually apparently does a pretty good job with a lot of the tests. None of the browsers are coming out perfect, which is probably a pretty good indicator that, you know, that don't, well, I don't know, LibreWolf has, you know, got most of them. But since none of them are coming out, you know, perfect, that makes me think that nobody's just flat out paying for results. But at the same time, it's kind of an interesting way of benchmarking these guys, because like even the Tor browser is failing a bunch of tests when you get down into like the, you know, tracking query parameters and things like that. So Vivaldi fails a whole bunch more than I would have expected too, because I thought that guy was supposed to be more on the privacy. But this got me looking into LibreWolf, which is going to be the second item I've got for you in Dojo tonight, and it's a fork of Firefox that's specifically built around privacy. You know, so they have pulled out anything that even remotely looks like telemetry. They've pulled all the Google integration out, so the search up defaults to DuckDuckGo. It's got uBlock Origin in it by default. They say they've hardened it, that they updated along with Firefox. Of course, it's open source. And I did pull it down and played with it a little bit, and it's definitely Firefox. You know, it's a fork of Firefox. So it kind of looks like it might be like a Waterfox or some of these other guys, but this one is strictly focused on privacy. And it comes in pretty lean, so I'm probably going to be trying this guy out more, but I like what I've seen of it so far. I've only been playing with it for like, you know, a few hours, but what I've seen so far, I like.
I'm not surprised Opera still exists.
Well, they were trying to sell it for the longest time, and then they gave up, forked it off of Chrome, and for a while there, it was they started trying to focus it on being a mobile browser. And I guess they dropped that because it doesn't look like a privacy test is even testing it on iOS. But it's still out on Android because they were then going to be privacy because they were going to built in a VPN into it. But I don't know, man. It just never. Yeah, Opera. I never much cared for Opera. I mean, mainly because they wanted you to pay for it, and all the other ones were free. So it was kind of like, why? You know what I mean? Because I never saw anything compelling in it. But maybe that's just me. I'm sure it had dedicated users back in the day. I knew a few, but I never understood it. All right, so that's all that's all I got. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit. Once again, in the IRC, CyberLard, Cycros, Madman, and myself. Madman, closing thoughts.
Madman has left the room.
I'm muted.
Madman
either
has
that
left
or
the
he's
planet.
Chatting to sexy singles in his area.
In my area right now.
Mm-hmm.
All those sexy ladies. But yeah, potential sales aren't sales, and if you haven't sold your Bitcoin, you haven't lost anything yet.
Are you? Closing
those would be my closing thoughts.
Yeah. Are you? Closing thoughts.
I am not a financial advisor, clearly.
All right.
Your Honor.
Your Honor. Yeah. It's all right. That's all I got. It's time to close it out.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
I'll pass it out.